हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
So now, having finished part one, means of all the events that brought them up to the point of the battle at Kurukshetra, and now part two then starts with them already being at the battleground, and then, you know, what will transpire then. Chapter 1, The Armies Prepare. After installing Dhrishtadyumna as his commander-in-chief, Yudhishthira and his generals consulted Krishna. They had heard, so in other words, the seven Akshauhinis, or each Akshauhini has a general, and then you have someone in charge of that. So you can say he's the general, but to make the distinction, they call him commander-in-chief, because all of them are commanders of their Akshauhini. But then you have the commander-in-chief, the one that says what's going to be the plan for how they'll all work together. Otherwise, they each might do something different, and it might be a problem. They had heard that Duryodhana had requested Bhishma to be the Kuru's commander-in-chief, and that he had accepted. Yudhishthira then asked Arjuna to be his army's chief general, working immediately under Dhrishtadyumna. He wanted to ensure that Arjuna's incomparable expertise was utilized fully in the battle. The seven divisions of the Pandavas' army were then placed under their seven commanders. Right, so they had those seven commanders, and then you had Dhrishtadyumna as the head, and Arjuna just immediately under, so that Arjuna and Dhrishtadyumna could discuss very nicely to get the maximum, you know, best plan that is there. As the Pandavas were speaking about the arrangements, Balaram arrived. He entered Yudhishthira's tent in the company of Akrura, Uddhava, Samba, Pradyumna, and other leading personalities from Dwarka. In his blue garments and garlanded by golden flowers, Balaram looked as majestic as Mount Kailash. Krishna stood to greet him, and all the kings did the same. They worshipped him with affection. Yudhishthira took Balaram's hands and greeted him warmly, showing him to a fine seat. After Balaram had saluted elders such as Drupad and Virat, he took a seat and said, "Many men are about to be slaughtered. Surely fate has ordained it, and it cannot be avoided. It is the hour of death for all these Kshatriyas. The earth is about to become a mass of clay, thickened with flesh and blood. I hope you heroes will emerge alive and well. Repeatedly, I requested Krishna to act equally towards both Kauravas and Pandavas, but he chose to favor you." Krishna looked at his elder brother and smiled. Balaram glanced across at him as he continued, "Keshava has set his heart upon your interests, and especially the interests of Dhananjaya. Your victory is assured because Krishna desires it. I cannot at any time act separately from him. Therefore, I will play no part in the war. Both Duryodhana and Bhima are my pupils at mace fighting, and both are equally dear to me. I cannot bear to fight against either. Therefore, I've decided to leave the area and go on a pilgrimage to the holy places, because I would not be able to sit by and indifferently watch the massacre." Right, at some point he would come in, you know, because Balaram then, you know, he sees that, you know, being the lord of the Kriya Shakti, that, you know, everything's proceeding properly, everything's working in its order, the whole creation unfolds by his desire, you know, in his service to please Krishna. And so therefore everything's there, the rules are there, and so that the rules are not followed or something, it would disturb him too much. Especially because both sides are dear to him. If it's like one side's dear and one side's inimical, and things that they don't follow rules, then naturally, then this just makes you more inspired to fight. So therefore he said, "I won't fight for either side, I'll go on a pilgrimage." Balaram stood up and placed his helmet on his head. Taking leave of Krishna and the Pandavas, he left, followed by the Yadavas, who had come with him. Soon the Pandavas received another visitor. It was Rukmi, King Bhishmaka, and Krishna's brother-in-law. He arrived with a full Akshauhini division of warriors. To please his sister, he had decided to offer his assistant to her husband's side. Twanging his bow, he strode into Yudhishthira's tent, where the Pandavas received him respectfully. He said, "O great ruler, if you are afraid at the prospect of war with the Kurus, then I am here to help you. There is none who can match my prowess. Your enemies will not be able to bear my might. Whatever part of their army you allot me to as my share will be ground into the earth. Even Bhishma, Drona, and Kripa cannot face me. I will defeat the Kurus and deliver you the world. Arjuna could not tolerate Rukmi's proud speech. He laughed. I was born in the Kuru race. I am Pandu's son and Drona's pupil, and I have Keshava's assistance. How can I be afraid of the enemy? O hero, when I faced the Gandharvas, who is my friend then? When I fought the furious Danavas and the netherworlds, who came to my aid? Then again, in the battle with the Kurus and the Matsya kingdom, who is my helper? I am not afraid, Rukmi. We have no need of your help. Go wherever you please or stay here if you like. Either way, we will fight with the Kurus and win. Because he's coming in and not offering assistance. He's just saying, okay, all of you must be afraid. It's a big army, but I'm here, so don't worry, everything. So that's a bit insulting, especially when he says, you know, Drona, Kripa, you know, Bhishma, that no one can handle my, you know, it's just, these are all their teachers. We have to remember that this is a fratricidal war, so it's amongst cousins of the same family. And so their elders are common. Just because they're fighting on the other side, but it doesn't mean that they're not to be respected. Seeing the other warriors agreeing with Arjuna, Rukmi scowled. Taking up his bow, he marched out of the tent without a word. He then took his soldiers to Duryodhana. If the Pandavas did not want him, then he would fight for the Kauravas. At least he had offered his help to Yudhishthira first. Actually, he was just as happy to fight for Duryodhana. Rukmi still remembered his sister Swayamvar, in which he had wanted her to select Shishupal, right, who would be fighting with Duryodhana. You know, I mean, his side. Krishna had come and kidnapped Rukmini. Rukmi had then chased Krishna and fought with him, only to be defeated and humiliated. Maybe now he could exact his revenge, right? But, you know, as because his family and all that, then you come, you offer that, because they're Kshatriyas. Their duty is to fight, you know, in a religious battle. And so then, you know, in that way, he's comfortable to take because he has. But if there had been no family relationship, he naturally would have chosen Duryodhana. Going before Duryodhana, he repeated the words he had used when speaking to Yudhishthira. Do not be afraid of the Pandavas, O king, for I am here to help you. Duryodhana also rejected him. I have no need of your help, he laughed. What fear do I have of the Pandavas? I am surrounded as I am by the world's greatest heroes and being a mighty warrior myself. Rukmi left the Kauravas and returned home, deciding to play no part in the war. If no one wanted his help, then he would not fight. Let them annihilate one another without him. Because right, his pride is no one appreciates it. So even we see is that Duryodhana, even though he was trying his best and by tricks to get the biggest army, but at the same time is no one was telling him they were better and he'll protect. You know, it was through his politics he arranged them. After Rukmi left, Duryodhana summoned his counselors. He had Shakuni's son, Uluka, come as a messenger to the Pandavas. Assured of his superior position, the prince wanted to mock his enemies and show his contempt for the so-called army. Duryodhana said, Oh, Uluka, go to the Pandavas and speak these words in Krishna's hearing. The time has now come for action. What we have expected for a long time has finally come to pass. We are about to fight a frightful war between ourselves, and you have caused it. Prove now the truth of all the boastful words you sent through Sanjaya. Let us see your actual power. Right, so he's still trying to blame them for it, because he on all things thinks they should never have had the power. He should always have had, it should have been him, not Yudhishthira. And, you know, at any time, why they got half the kingdom? He banished them. Why did his father let them back and give half the kingdom? You know, in the dice match, he cheated them already. Then he had to do it again. Then in his mind that, you know, they had gone out, you know, they had come back. In his mind, a few months early, you know, by astrological calculation. And, you know, these kind of things. He wasn't counting. He didn't count properly. And so then, you know, in his mind, it's like he wants peace, means he'll peacefully run the king of the world. All Yudhishthira has to do is go back to the forest. You know, what's the problem? You know, so Yudhishthira wants a war, then there'll be a war. But he's trying to blame Yudhishthira when it's actually himself is 100% at fault here. Duryodhana's black eyes narrowed. Standing up as he spoke, he pointed at Uluka. Say this to Yudhishthira, right? So the first one was a general one, but it should be heard said in the hearing of Krishna. Standing up as he spoke, "Say this to Yudhishthira. How do you pose as a virtuous man, O descendant of Bharata? Now you now desire to destroy the world for the sake of wealth. One who presents himself as pious while secretly concealing wicked intentions is said to be like the cat in the famous story of old. Listen to the story my father heard from Narada Rishi." Right, so this is a standard. We see it's used in modern politics and all that, but it's a standard thing. What you are doing wrong, you blame the other side for doing it. And you point out in whatever way you can that they're the ones that are doing the wrong when it's actually you're doing. He's the one that wanted the battle. He was very tired that everyone was trying to tell him to settle. He wanted the battle, and now when the battle's there, now he says, "You've done all this." Right? "Once there was a cat who went to the Ganges. Standing on the bank with upraised paws, he says, 'I shall practice virtue.' After some time, the birds began to trust him and even praise him for his devotions. That cat continued with his austerities, and in due course, the mice also saw the cat's peaceful demeanor and long-time pious activities, practices. They decided to take shelter of him, although he was naturally their enemy. They said, 'We seek your protection. You are a refuge and our best friend. Be like an uncle to us and save us from our antagonists. You are virtuously and kind and have adopted a pious course.' The cat reluctantly agreed. 'I will do what I can for you, but I also need your help. My austerities have made me so weak I cannot move. Therefore, some of you must assist me to reach the riverside each day so that I can bathe.' The mice agreed to this and began to live around the cat. Every day, a number of them would go to the river with him, and the cat would eat them. Thus, the cat grew fatter and stronger, while the mice diminished in number. Soon, they realized what was happening. One wise mouse among them pointed out that an animal living on fruits and roots cannot have hairs in his feces. He concluded, 'The cat only makes a show of devotion. His real business is eating mice.' The mice fled in all directions, and the wicked cat also went back to where he had come from. 'O Yudhishthira, you are behaving in the same way towards your kinsmen. Your words mean one thing while your acts are quite different. Give up your disguise as a gentle and harmless man. Come out and fight like a true Kshatriya. Dry your mother's tears by winning victory in battle. If you can, remember our former antagonism, the poison, the lack house, the insult to Draupadi. Show us your real strength.'" So one, you have this aspect where they do this, so it creates the anger, so you actually have a proper fight. You do have that aspect. But at the same time, Duryodhana, it annoys him no end that everybody says that Yudhishthira is virtuous and Duryodhana is sinful. But he's pointing out, no, you're just hiding that you're sinful because, you know, you want this war and this and that. But at the same time, he's pointing out, see, we've done all these things. Now let's see you come out and fight. Because the point is, if they fight, then here's the opportunity to get rid of them. It's not that Duryodhana cares if all the kings on the planet die, as long as he's left alive and he's a ruler of the earth. And so if there's a good fight, then, you know, it goes on. And in his idea, the Pandavas will be destroyed, and then he'll be left unrivaled. You know, that's his desire. Duryodhana laughed. He derided the Pandavas in various ways, mocking their power and praising his own. He reminded them all of all the vows they had taken. Now they should fulfill them. Duryodhana remembered Krishna's universal form, which he had exhibited in Hastinapur. "Tell Vasudev that his display of illusion does not scare me. I too can show many forms. But what is the use of such things? Tell him, O Keshava, come in that mystical form to the battlefield, and we'll see what difference it will make. I know your power, and I know Arjuna's. I know the Gandiva bow and the inexhaustible quivers he holds, and I know about the fiery chariot Agni gave him with his celestial banners. Still, I challenge you. Indeed, I could face 1,000 Krishnas and 100 Arjunas, and still have them flee in all directions." Right? Arjuna already defeated him with a kid driving his chariot, not Krishna. And still he talks like this. "Even knowing everything about your power, I shall deprive you of your kingdom without fear." Duryodhana began to pace as delivered his arrogant message. Karna, Dushasana, and Shakuni cheered his brave speech and encouraged him to say more. Duryodhana reminded the Pandavas of the dice game and their exile at his hands. Is this not sufficient proof of my superiority? What he doesn't catch is that he thinks, I performed this dice, I may have cheated him, whatever it says, but the point is they went to the forest and I remained in the kingdom, so who's more powerful? You know, like that. Yudhishthira went to the forest. He could have fought, but no, he went to the forest. What he doesn't understand is that Yudhishthira following Dharma is a much greater virtue. He's respecting seniors even though things are going not as he likes, but Duryodhana, if any senior says something he doesn't like, immediately he says something and storms out of the room like a child and everything like that. Bhima must have been tired as he cleaned pots in Virat's kitchen. Arjuna wore bangles and braided hair. Yudhishthira became a Virat's servant. These are the ways a Kshatriya punishes others weaker than himself. I have no fear of the Pandavas, nor of Krishna, nor of any of the fools who have chosen to fight beside you. I will not return even the smallest part of your kingdom. And he's saying that it's Yudhishthira is the one causing the fight. But he points out all the ways he's insulted him, but there's no way that Yudhishthira has ever insulted him. And then he says it's Yudhishthira causing the fight. So that's what we see. It's an aspect of politics that if you're doing something wrong, you just blame the other side for what you're doing and do it with conviction. And then it confuses people, right? It's obviously not right, but because you're so convinced, it confuses. So you see that, you know, this is the way people, unscrupulous people in power or politicians, or that's what they do. That's they're professionals at this. Uluka memorized every word in the moon in which it was spoken. Although Duryodhana spoke for almost an hour, he concluded, "Let the battle begin tomorrow. Then you will see your folly. Like a frog in a well who cannot know the ocean, you cannot know how vast are my forces. One who wishes to defeat Bhishma, Drona, and Kripa would be able to rend a mountain with his head or swim across an ocean. When you see the Kuru forces assembled like a great sea, then will your desire for the kingdom disappear. All thoughts of ruling the world will vanish, like a man who has never practiced devotion yet desires heaven. So is your hope for winning this kingdom. Tomorrow we shall see who should be the earth's rightful ruler." Duryodhana then told Uluka to deliver the message at once. Uluka mounted his chariot and rode over to the Pandavas camp. With Duryodhana's words ringing in his head, he knew his message would incite the Pandavas' fury, and he approached Yudhishthira with apprehension. "Please see me only as an envoy, knowing the law in relation to messengers. Do not become angry when you hear my words. I will only speak what Duryodhana has told me to say and nothing more." Yudhishthira smiled and showed Uluka to a seat in his tent. "Do not fear, you may speak freely here. Tell us what the small-minded Duryodhana, driven by greed and lacking in foresight, has said." So, you know, he points out his weakness and everything and all that. And then he says, yes, so let's hear what this person has to say. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.